This is Y Nada Más. A Real Madrid Podcast.
Hello, everybody. This is Eric Rivera from the Y Nada Más podcast. And today is a little bit different because of the fact that I am not in my studio. I am actually elsewhere. And that's kind of fun, huh? Because of the fact that I can't always get on the mic in my studio at my office, then what happens is I got to do it kind of like on the road. And I think I've told you guys a couple of times, I'm really trying to make sure the content stays up to date and I'm constantly putting out content, because really that's the only way you can succeed when it comes to podcasting. Is you have to consistently, so any of you guys out there, I've done podcasts in the past. I had a previous successful one that had to do with kickboxing and MMA. And then now, you know, with the Nada Más podcast, I want it to be successful. I mean, I want to make a little money off of it, but not, you know, I guess it's kind of like you just want to have something that's residual, or I guess supplemental to whatever you're doing, you know. But if you want to really make money on a podcast or on any sort of content, you got to be delivering pretty much like every day. Now, that's not something that I can realistically do, but the fact is I can do it now. I bought myself another mic so that I could do it if I'm on the road, if I'm not in my office, because I travel a lot for work. And then if I kind of have like a thought, you know, a quick thought about something that's going on with Real Madrid, with up-to-date news, and I can kind of put an opinion up, then I'll do that. Now, what I'm going to do is, just to get you guys know and to jump into what we really want to talk about here, what I want to do is, a lot of times, if these kind of ones that I'm doing today, they're gonna be audio only. So I will put them up on YouTube, but they won't have a video element to it. So they won't have, a camera recording of myself. Now, if you don't know what I'm talking about, we have a YouTube channel. So for you guys that are listening, we have a YouTube channel. Go over and check it out. It's at youtube.com/YNadaMasPodcast. So there's a video version of the podcast if you want to see, you know, me in my studio talking about Real Madrid. But in this case, if there's audio only versions and that's how you're listening and consuming the podcast, then you're really not going to see that much of a difference. The only difference is you're going to see is that I'm putting out more content than usual, you know. So that's the idea. The idea is to stay up to date with all of that. And I can kind of just while I'm driving, or while I'm on the train, or wherever, if I'm on a plane, I wouldn't do it as much, because people would be like looking at me pretty crazy. But if I'm, you know, basically, or if I'm just like in a hotel room somewhere, I can do something very quickly and then upload it. I'll probably do a little bit of editing to it, you know, put the bumper on it, essentially, you know, the logo for Y Nada Más. And then throw it up and you guys can have the podcast will come out quicker. So that's the idea, guys. I really want to up the content. I want to up the amount of content and really not leave you guys waiting so much for podcasts. All right, with that said, let's talk about what's going on with Real Madrid. Obviously, we had a big game against Girona this weekend. Now, why was it a big game? I mean, obviously, Girona isn't a team that usually pops up in the conversation for being at the top of the table or being a direct competitor with Real Madrid. But it just so happens that Girona has performed admirably at the beginning of the season, and they found themselves in first place before Saturday. So what happened is essentially that we had a top of the table clash between Girona and Real Madrid this weekend to see who would essentially take the top of the table? Would it be Real Madrid, or would Girona continue to establish himself and continue to be impressive at the top of the table? Now, one of the things that a lot of pundits had been saying, if you were looking around, is that while Girona was playing really good football, they weren't playing football, well, they hadn't really been tested against, you know, one of the top teams in La Liga, which is usually an Atletico, Real Madrid, or Barcelona. So they hadn't gone against either of those three. Now, obviously, they had, you know, they had won against Villarreal, they had beaten other teams, but they hadn't been necessarily tested against the top clubs in La Liga. So it will all remain to be seen how good was their performance really going to be? How good was their form really once they faced the top level team? And well, we got to see it on Saturday. Really, Real Madrid suffered early. And that's something that, you know, I think a lot of us are still worried about a little bit is, you know, what is going on with Real Madrid's defense? What's happening? It seems like every single time, and I was, you know, when I was on X, formerly known as Twitter, when I was on X, you know, seeing a lot of comments from people, it was the same thing. The idea, the thought was, hey, like, why is it that every single time Real Madrid, there's a set piece against Real Madrid, either it's a corner or it's a free kick where they deliver a ball into the box. Why is Real Madrid having such a difficulty clearing the ball? And that is really one of the things that I think is a concern for a lot of us Madridistas, because that's what's happening. That is what it looks like is happening right now with Real Madrid. Why is it that every single time they're kicking the ball into the box, we are having a difficulty clearing it? Now, there were two close headers at the beginning of the game. One from Yangel Herrera, and the other one from the young Ukrainian on, I don't remember if it was Dovvik, I think his name is, or Sigankov. I think it might have been Sigankov, but it was close, it hit the post, and it seemed like we were going to go down early in this game, which seems to be Real Madrid's kind of MO as of late. As of late, meaning years now, where Madridistas have to essentially suffer from the beginning of the game because we go down early and then we end up coming back at the end of the game. It's been kind of our MO ever since the BBC era ended. You know, so what's going on now is, so what happened in this game is essentially after that initial scare, Real Madrid really started to get a foothold on this game. And, you know, and a lot of people were criticizing, and I'm going to be a Carlo Ancelotti. I am for 100% a Carlo Ancelotti, I don't know if you want to call it an apologist, a Carlo Ancelotti fan, a Carlo Ancelotti defender. I mean, let's be real, people. I mean, I don't understand why people continue to hate on this man when Carlo Ancelotti is one of the winningest, if not the most successful coach in world football. You know, aside from guys like we all know, like Pep Guardiola is up there, you know, is up there with some of the best in the world. Obviously, Zidane is up there because of what he's won with Real Madrid. But Carlo Ancelotti, across his career, has won so much. He was up in the name, obviously, names like Jose Mourinho and all that, even though Mourinho, as of late, has kind of balling off, but then again, he's been on teams that haven't been as successful when it comes to talent. So you look at Ancelotti, and Ancelotti has been, you know, really one of the best coaches that this game has seen. And yeah, maybe he might not be this amazing, incredible tactician, or I don't know what constitutes an amazing, incredible tactician, because if at the end of the day you get the job done, then, you know, you get the job done. You know, you essentially, that's what you're measured by, is you're measured by your wins. You're measured by the trophies you were able to accrue. And Ancelotti has been successful with many a team. You know, I just don't understand why he gets hated on. And the other fact is, players love to play for the guy. And when players love to play for the guy, you know that you have something that is very important because of the fact that you can have all the tactics in the world. You can be a mastermind at football, but if you can't control, you know, the 22 guys or the 23 guys in your squad list, if you can't control that dressing room, and guys really aren't buying into your strategy, or really aren't buying into your tactics, really just aren't buying into your style of playing football, that's going to be evident on the pitch. That's going to be evident in games, that players just really aren't happy playing with you. So, and I think that is far more of a detriment to a team than some guy who is probably not as good tactically, but he really knows how to get the team hyped up and the chemistry of the team really is solid, you know? So that is one thing that I think people are missing the point completely. You look at this team, and that's one thing I want to like say before we jump into the rest of the game. You look at this team, and these guys truly, truly, truly enjoy playing with one another. You know, they really enjoy playing with one another. You see it when they score, they're all happy. You see the from the videos of training, they're all really enjoying being with one another, and they're getting the results. They're laughing, they're having fun. So there is, aside from them being a professional team, it's the fact that you enjoy the people you work with. And when you enjoy the people with the people you work with, obviously things are gonna get done, and it's going to feel less of like a job and more of, you know, we're going out there and we're having fun and we're gonna score. And it's also easier, I tell you guys this, I think it's also easier that if you are down, you know, you're down in the score line, whether it's 1-0, 2-0, you're down, it's a lot easier to sort of motivate each other to get out of the hole, you know. Not always though. You know, not always, and that's where Ancelotti's tactics do come in. And that was where, why it was such a huge mistake. His planning was a mistake. There was a mistake in his planning against, obviously, Atletico Madrid, putting Bellingham as a striker when we know he's not a striker. You know, putting Modric and Kroos in the same lineup when we know they're, when we know that, you know, them together, they don't have the speed essentially to keep up with, you know, some of these more aggressive teams that are more rapid on the counterattack or quicker in the, or more, there's more strength in the midfield. So his planning in that regard was what caused us to go down. And even though we tried to fight back, you know, our defensive problems obviously showed up big time in that game. But I think that if we get the things right against this Atletico team, who has struggled against the likes of Cadiz, we saw that yesterday. They've struggled against other teams as well. I think they've struggled against, it was Osasuna, in a game that looked like a complete robbery of sorts. So in those games, you would, I think, if Real Madrid gets its planning well, if it gets its lineup correct, you're really going to see Real Madrid excel and not suffer as much as they are. The lineup yesterday when we played against Girona was perfect, I think. You know, a lot of people were shitting on Carlo Ancelotti. That's why I go back to this whole idea of talking badly about Ancelotti. A lot of people were talking badly about Ancelotti because of his, or not badly, but because of the fact that he left Fran Garcia and Ferland Mendy on the bench, our two actual left backs, and he decided to go for Camavinga. A position that Camavinga has played in the past. He played it last season because we didn't have really a backup for Mendy. He played it last season. He played it really well, but he stated that he doesn't like to play there. He obviously likes to be in the midfield. But let's be real, guys. Obviously, yes, Camavinga as a left back is not something that should be, how would I say, it should not be the norm, right? It should be exactly kind of what happened yesterday. Fran Garcia is sort of not, hasn't really, I don't, you know, and this is the thing, I don't think Fran Garcia is a bad player. I think he's a phenomenal player. The only problem is I still think he's green. I still think he's young. Obviously, he's not the same talent for me as Camavinga is. But I think he is a solid player. It's the reason we wanted him. It's the reason a lot of people enjoyed his, enjoyed his play last season with Rayo Vallecano. It was one of the reasons we wanted to bring him back. So we really have to look at, you know, maybe it just takes time for him to adjust to the team. You know, he's only had a couple, he's only had what? I think it's been about, we were in match day eight, just finished match day eight. So you really think he's only had, about 10 games to really adjust to Real Madrid. He hasn't been always the starter. He's been taken off as well. He's looked good in some occasions. He's looked terrible in others. Atletico was one of those where, sure, he can help you in the attack, but defensively, he's a little bit suspect. And it's the problem that it's the same issue that occurs with Ferland Mendy, where Ferland Mendy is a more solid defensive left back, but he's not as good going forward. And then his form has kind of fallen off since he started with Real Madrid, because his first, I would say his first two seasons with Real Madrid were pretty solid defensively. It's just he didn't offer too much to attack. And, there's not a lot of overlapping runs with Vinicius, so Vinicius kind of finds himself isolated on the left flank without anybody sort of to back him up. Something that, he's not seeing with Fran Garcia, something that obviously he's adjusting. Camavinga does a great job of when he plays as a left back. And he got it absolutely right. I mean, let's be real. Ancelotti got it absolutely right. Camavinga had a stellar game against Girona. One of the best players on the pitch, aside from Tchouameni, which Tchouameni was absolutely fantastic. And it shows again why Tchouameni belongs on the pitch and why it was such an error by Ancelotti to not play Tchouameni when we played against Atletico. It was a huge issue to not have him on the pitch. Kroos has been phenomenal. Kroos has been phenomenal this season. What he says is true. This whole idea of, why are they putting me in the same... and I get this whole idea. Why are they putting him in the same boat as Luka Modric when Luka Modric is 38 years old? So he's definitely, on the high side of his age when it comes to professional football. Because I'm not going to say he's old. Listen, I'm 40 years old. I'm not going to say he's old when I'm 40 and he's 38. All right. But when it comes to football, that is old, But Toni Kroos is 33. So Toni Kroos still has a lot for me, especially in a central role, in a midfield role. Toni Kroos has a lot, and especially with the way Toni Kroos plays. He's not a pacey guy. That's not his job. He is really a metronome, and essentially he's the one who keeps the tempo of the game. He's the one who slows down the game. His vision to see the pitch is so insane. He picks out passes. He makes incredible plays. He's so silky smooth on the ball, getting out of tough situations. Toni Kroos has been phenomenal this season. So I think you need to add, which is what I've always been saying, you need to add the aggressiveness, the speed, the pace of a player like Camavinga or a player like Valverde. You need to have that in the midfield. Obviously, having Jude Bellingham as the tip of that diamond, attacking-wise, is also going to help Toni Kroos have another person to pick out in the attack, aside from the likes of Vinicius or Joselu. And I think we just got it right. I think we got it right, and you need to have Toni Kroos on that left side of the diamond in the midfield. You need to have Tchouameni. And then having Camavinga helping Kroos out as well defensively on that left-hand side, it just really paid dividends at the end of the day. I think having somebody like Fran Garcia would have left Toni Kroos kind of, if Fran Garcia, went up the sideline, Toni Kroos would be the one defending. And Fran Garcia is a little bit erratic coming back. So I think, it was just the right combination. Now, is it going to work against teams not like Girona? I don't know yet. And probably you'd have a little bit more trouble. If Kyle Walker was bombing down that right side, you know, you might have a little bit more of an issue, you know. So I'm sorry, on the left side, you know, you might have a little bit more of an issue. I don't know. It remains to be seen. I mean, that's kind of what was happening when we played Man City. And you had, you know, so many different players, so many high-level players, like on a team like Man City, which I still think is the team to beat worldwide when it comes to the Champions League. I know they lost this weekend against Wolves, but they're missing some key players. I still think that's the team to beat. I think this season, the toughest teams are really going to come out of the Premier League. I think the likes of Liverpool are looking pretty solid. I think the likes of obviously, of Man City are looking solid. I think Serie A with the teams like Inter is looking pretty good as well. I think those are going to be the teams that are going to give problems. PSG, I think, is sort of a mixed bag at the moment to see, you know, how they're going to do with all these new additions and all the, you know, the big exits that happened. But I think Real Madrid can do well if it's planned well. Can we make it all the way? I'm still unsure. I still think Man City beats us most of the time this season. But, you know, seeing how they performed against Wolves, I still think, you know, there's always that one-off that can hurt them. So I think there's a chance. But going back to the game, you know, another person I want to talk about is Joselu. I've said it. There's something about this guy that I really, really like. I still go back to the fact that Joselu, listen, we had Mariano. Yes, we barely ever played Mariano. But Mariano was, you know, anytime we played him, he just looked absolutely atrocious, did not look good, couldn't score for the life of him, you know. And Joselu just seems like he's, and Mariano, it was that whole idea of him, did he really want to be at Real Madrid? Was he just there for a paycheck? You know, he fought so much not to leave and just wanted to, you know, stay there. Joselu seems like, you know, this is what, you know, he said it after in the press conference or after the in his post-game interview, that this is the team of his life. He loves Real Madrid. He is more Madridista than a lot of other guys we've had on the team in the past. He absolutely loves and adores Real Madrid. And that, and aside from the fact that he's a guy that can score, we've seen it already, he can score. He continues to, one of the things that I like about him is he continues, he doesn't get discouraged, you know, in that game. Obviously that he wasn't able to score the other day against Las Palmas. He was trying, he consistently tried, he was getting frustrated. A lot of strikers would have shut down and been like, man, I can't score on this guy or I'm not getting anything in the net. And he was able to do it. At the end of the day, he was able to finally get his goal because he kept on going for it. And he was the first, the first goal that we were able to score against Girona, obviously off an incredible pass from Bellingham. But these are the guys, Joselu is the type of guy, he has, I believe, 5 goals already. And I go back always to the fact that this guy scored 15 goals with an Espanyol team that got relegated. You know, he was the only shining light on that Espanyol team. One of the only shining lights on that Espanyol team was Joselu, and he was able to do it. You know, he's not a Benzema. He's not but he is your in-the-box poacher, you know, guy that is going to be in the right place at the right time. You need some sort of reference in the goal, you know, in the area, and he is that guy. Excuse me. He is that guy that is going to be able to get the results for you there. You know, so I really just don't understand. I know people, obviously, he's not the replacement to Benzema. He's not a world-class striker. But you need somebody that gets the job done. You know, when you don't have that world-class striker, when you don't have, you need, even when you have a backup striker, you need a backup striker that can get the job done. You know, you're seeing that a lot with Man City when they have somebody like Julian Alvarez coming off the bench, or, you know, they're positioning him a little bit behind Haaland. You need somebody that's going to be sort of play that second fiddle. And Julian Alvarez, obviously, I don't want to compare Joselu to Julian Alvarez, who I think Julian Alvarez is far more a solid striker than Joselu is, far more of a complete player than Joselu is. But I really do believe that Joselu can get the job done with what he's given, with the service that he's given. If it continues the same way we saw against Girona, I think this guy can put the ball in the net. And if he can't put it in the net, then we have other guys like Vinicius and Bellingham who continue to score and do really well. I mean, well, like Bellingham, who's continuing to score, obviously scoring his, what, sixth goal in seven games? Or is it seven goals now? But obviously, Bellingham continues his winning way, his strength, his talent. He is just an immense player that we have here at Real Madrid. And I really think these guys, as I've said it before, can get the job done. Where we are lacking right now is defensively. And now we have a huge issue, which, you know, I'll talk about in a second, which was that, you know, Nacho getting sent off for an idiotic tackle in the last 10 seconds of the game that it ends up getting him sent off. So now he's suspended for probably three games. I think three games is what he's going to be given because it was a direct red card and it was just a stupid tackle, you know. A lot of people like to come out and defend their players or whatnot. That was just an indefensible tackle. Why are you even doing that? And, you know, the game is up 3-0. It's the last seconds of the game. Porto was still so far out from being in on goal, you know. It was a brainless tackle. It was something that, you know, you got to chalk it up as a mistake because Nacho, it doesn't seem like he's usually the type of guy to do things like that. But obviously, it was just an idiotic move. And especially considering that our defense is so porous at the moment because of the fact that we're missing important players. You know, we're missing David Alaba now. Now we're going to be missing Nacho. Rudiger, at the last minute, was able to come in. So now who are we going to play? Hopefully, David Alaba is going to be ready for that game. Maybe do you put Mendy as a center back? I know he had played as a center back at one point a couple of seasons ago and looked pretty solid doing it. But we have to see, you know, Mendy, is he even in good form at all? You know, he hasn't had any minutes for the longest time. So you really, you know, that's where our issues lie. You know, Carvajal is on fire. He's been such a solid player for Real Madrid. But that's another issue. At right back, if we don't have Carvajal, who is a guy that is likely, usually has a propensity to get injured, if we don't have him, then we are really, really, really lacking in who can possibly step in for us. Because Lucas Vazquez is not the guy when it comes to just relying on him as a left back. Sure, he's a great utility player and he can offer a lot of things coming off the bench, but he is not a solid right back, you know. So that's where, you know, we're going to be lacking. And then as a left back, unless we're playing Camavinga there or Fran Garcia, you know, really ups his game, which I think he will. I'm not going to give up on Fran Garcia yet. And I don't think any of us should, you know, still a young guy, still hungry, looked solid, like I said, with his season with Rayo Vallecano, has looked solid in moments with Real Madrid, is good going forward, but, you know, is a liability right now going back. So there's a lot of different things that are happening there. Especially in the defense, I think that's where we're most worried. Once again, going back to that comment that was, you know, why is it that every single time a ball gets floated into the box, crossed into the box, whether it's from a set play, from a set piece, or from a corner kick, whatever, do we look so dangerous? Nobody covers players. You know, I think, I don't remember how many times, I think it's Dovic, Yangel Herrera, and there was another player there from Girona, kept on getting the ball and being on the receiving end of the ball. And they put the ball, luckily, over the bar or missed their headers completely. But we saw the same thing against Atletico Madrid. We were absolutely atrocious. Every single ball that went into the box was headed in goal. Three headers, and one of the headers from Griezmann, who is not a tall guy, you know, completely unmarked, just terrible marking, defensively not there, Alaba making a bunch of mistakes, not covering Morata, and, you know, easy pickings for some teams to score, especially if they have a guy like Morata or somebody who's good. And especially like for Barcelona, we have to be careful as well. When you have guys like Araujo, when you have guys like Lewandowski in the box that can score and head the ball in, you know, at any time, you know. So that is where I think we are super weak right now. I think midfield, we're strong. Obviously, attack is still always going to be a question mark. As for Rodrigo, I really think, and this is something I said the other day, and I wanted to kind of talk about that. Rodrigo, I really think a lot of people have been giving Rodrigo a lot of shtick or a lot of hate, when really, you know, they both Vinicius and Rodrigo have been put in positions that are not their normal positions. These guys are both out and out wingers, and now you're putting them as you know, to play more centrally as strikers. They're not used to that. Now, do they have the talent to obviously adjust to that? Sure. But the other day, putting Bellingham as a striker completely isolated Rodrigo as the only real attacking outlet for Real Madrid when we played Atletico. And he was essentially, there were so many points in that game where you really saw him by himself against the defense like Atletico Madrid, who were, you know, resolute in sitting back and playing just very defensively. So, you know, leaving him in that position is going to make him look terrible, but it's going to make him look a lot worse than what he really is. And Rodrigo has had some phenomenal plays this season that just, you know, he's almost scored goals. He's hit the post. It's gone slightly wide. You know, he made an incredible run against Girona, and the ball just slightly, you know, he just hasn't been, his aim, I guess, hasn't been fine-tuned this season. He hasn't really found the net the way he'd want to. But Tchouaméni said it after the game. Tchouaméni said after he scored his goal that that Cristiano Ronaldo, I think, had said it at one point that goals are like ketchup. So it's like the ketchup in the bottle, that, you know, you're struggling to get it out of the bottle, you're hitting the back of the bottle and it's not coming out. But then finally, when ketchup comes out, it comes out, and a lot of it comes out. So really, I think, you know, we got to give Rodrigo the benefit of the doubt. I really think that once he gets, you know, his scoring boots on and he's able to sort of get his confidence back, scores a couple of goals, we'll start seeing those goals start pouring in from Rodrigo again. I really do think he is that talented player. I really do think that he, you know, I wouldn't count out Rodrigo simply because he's having a bad spell at the moment. And maybe this, you know, benching him for Joselu, who is able to find goal at the moment because he's that striker, you know, because he's a striker and a solid one at that, as I've said, giving him that competition is going to fire up Rodrigo, and we're gonna see the results of that. So I really think, you know, we're at the top of the table. Yes, we lost that game against Atletico. It was a wake-up call, but we've been, you know, we've had two wins since then. One, which was an important win over Girona. We were at the top of the table, even though it's Girona. They were at the top of the table. They've been playing well, so we have to take that. We have to see how Real Madrid is going to perform this week against Napoli. That Napoli, for all their troubles, seems to be finding again their form. Osimhen is back. And, you know, he seems to be happy playing for Napoli again. You know, he wrote a whole thing the other day about, you know, being happy to play for Napoli. You know, so I think that, and I'm a Napoli fan, as I've said before, outside of La Liga. When it comes to Serie A, I do follow Napoli. It's my favorite team. I'm a big Osimhen fan. I'm a big Kvaratskhelia fan. I like Zielinski, Lobotka. I think all of these guys have been solid. Raspadori, Politano. I'm just a big Napoli fan. I mean, I love the city. I love Italian culture. So I love Serie A. I watch it just as religiously as I would say I watch La Liga. So I think it's going to be an interesting game. I'm a little afraid, and somebody brought this up on X the other day, at, you know, if you're going to be weak defensively, the one of the people you would probably not want to be weak defensively against is a guy like Osimhen. And since he's kind of a little bit angry and has something to prove, or not something to prove because he's already proven it really, but he wants to show Napoli how much he's really needed at Napoli. You know, that's a dangerous concoction to have, you know. And I believe we are playing at the Diego Armando Maradona. So Napoli at home is not some place where you can afford to be weak defensively. So we'll see how that goes. I mean, really, if we play the way we played against Girona, except for those first few minutes of the game, I really think we can do well against Napoli. They are struggling defensively as well. You know, after losing Kim, they're with Rachmani and Jesus and Nathan, I don't think they're as strong as they were with, you know, the likes of Kim and Koulibaly, that they had previously on the team. So, well, Koulibaly's been gone, 2 years now, I think. But anyway, but still, he was, you know, they were more solid defensively when they had those guys back there. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens, guys. But really, I think, you know, it's not a time to be stressed. Like I said in the last podcast, I named the last podcast Remain Calm. Atletico was always going to be a tough team. They've been able to grind out wins. But I don't think they're as solid. But we gave them, you know, Ancelotti definitely, I think, and he admitted it. I really think he delivered the win to Atletico on a silver platter. I don't think he'll make the same mistake again. I really feel like Real Madrid has learned its lesson from there, hopefully. And we'll see how they continue. You know, we'll see how they perform against Napoli. We'll see how they perform this next weekend as well. But I think things are looking better. It's still shaky. You know, it's not 100% entirely convincing like we would want it to be. But, you know, it's not a time to be, I would say, all doom and gloom, as so many Madridistas could be, you know? And then the other thing I would say is, so somebody brought up a good point on my YouTube channel. They were saying, because I brought up during the last podcast, that Modric and Kroos, because they've been talking about how, you know, they were not happy with their roles on the team as of late, that Ancelotti buckled under the pressure from both of them, and that they probably, you know, pressured him into playing them, and that's why he played them. And then somebody said, I don't think Ancelotti's the type to buckle under pressure. I also don't think Modric and Kroos are the type of players to really act that way and act angry and sort of like get in his ear about it. I would say I disagree slightly. They're two guys that have played a lot of football for Real Madrid, have been two legends for Real Madrid. You know, and I think when you're a player, you know, sometimes you don't know when to call it quits. You don't know how to say no. You don't know. You know, that's really the job of the you know, like I was listening to a pundit the other day, and he was saying a lot of times, you know, a coach has to protect a player from himself. A player will always say he's ready because a player always wants to play. So Modric is always going to say he's ready. He's, you know, he's Modric. You know, he's a solid player. Even at 38 years old, he can still provide some incredible performances. So do I think he can add pressure? Sure. Now, do I think Ancelotti buckled under pressure, like they said something directly to Ancelotti? No. But Ancelotti, remember, at the end of the day, is a man manager. So he really does try to listen to his players and tries to, I guess, help them the best way he can, or tries to listen to them, and especially two guys that are legendary players like Kroos and Modric. So maybe it wasn't a thing of him buckling under the pressure. Maybe it was of him a thing of him trying to make nice, trying to see if he could fit them in the lineup for one game. My opinion on that is he chose the wrong game to do it, you know. And at the end of the day, maybe I honestly think it worked in his favor, because I think it worked in his favor where he can now tell them both, listen, guys, look what happened when I played you guys both at the same time against Atletico Madrid. We weren't as good as we could potentially be. You guys are going to have to really, you know, work with the team. I'm going to, you know, move you guys around. I'm going to rotate you guys. Although I think Kroos is 100% right too. I don't think Kroos is in the same boat as Modric. I think Kroos can still be a starter. I definitely feel like the likes of Camavinga coming in for Kroos, you know, him being so young still, and the fact that I think, you know, you have Valverde, you have Tchouaméni. I think for me, you know, you need that youth, either a Valverde or a Camavinga in the midfield, with the experience of a Kroos, also with the experience of, let's say, a Carvajal in defense. You need sort of that experience to sort of lead the lines. You need that type of experience in order to really, you need sort of a captain, as one, you know, a good friend once told me that he's from Madrid as well. A good friend once told me, he goes, you need kind of like a captain on every line, you know? So you need a captain for the guy that's really kind of the leader in the defense, the guy who's really a leader in the midfield, and a guy who's leader in the attacking department. When it comes to the attacking department, you know, we have young guys in Vinicius and Rodrigo, but they're so experienced at this point that really one of them should be taking up the mantle as the leader of that attacking line. If not Joselu, I think being, you know, 33 years old and having played so many years can have that experience. Obviously, we have to see, you know, how much he's really going to be played. Is Rodrigo going to lose his position to Joselu? I don't think so. So, you know, we might see Joselu now that Rodrigo and now that Vinicius is back, and you know, he gave Joselu a start. If Rodrigo finds his form again, will those guys two be the two starters? Then they're really the two guys that have to come out and be the leaders, you know. And that's about it, guys. That's my commentary for this podcast. I hope the sound wasn't too bad, because I was, you know, in my car doing this whole thing. You know, like I said, I'm trying to keep the content up. I'm trying to keep the content consistent. And so sometimes I'm going to do these podcasts where I'm either in a hotel room or somewhere where I can, you know, do a quick audio thing instead of a video thing. The video thing, I still will put it up as a video on the podcast. It'll just have a background. It won't have any video. But just make sure you continue to follow us on the YouTube channel. That's basically Y Nada Más Podcast on YouTube. Of course, I am always active. The most I'm active is on X, which is at Y Nada Más Podcast on X, formerly known as Twitter. Also on Facebook, at Y Nada Más Podcast. On Instagram, we are at YNM Podcast. And of course, hit me up. Hit us up at info@ynadamas.net. That is our official email. You know, I'm still looking for guys. I need other guys to maybe jump on the podcast here and there. If you're interested, I am looking to see if I can find some more US-based guys as well, that are really Madridista fans. So if you want to jump on the podcast sometime to, you know, really just shoot the shit, as they say here in the United States, about Real Madrid, to talk about Real Madrid, hit me up at info@ynadamas.net. Hit, you know, DM me at the Y Nada Más Podcast, or, you know, hit me up on Twitter or X, and, you know, let me know if you're interested in that. Also, if you're interested in maybe writing a couple of different articles, if you guys, some of you guys I know out there are hungry to write, if you're interested in that, also hit me up, info@ynadamas.net, and we can talk about maybe, you know, writing a couple, you know, pieces for the Y Nada Más website. So that's it, guys. That's it for me from here in sunny South Florida, right now in my car. And I'll talk to you guys again soon. As always, a la Madrid.
This has been Y Nada Más, al Real Madrid Podcast.